best present of all. And that's why we have Christmas, because God sent Jesus to live with us and spend time, care, and lots of love on us. And that makes Jesus the best present of all. Of course, that's not quite how it happened. The wise men didn't really bring washing powder and a plastic toy. Actually, they weren't wise men at all, but we'll get to that in a minute. They did bring gifts, though, and they were not the usual gifts for a baby. So, who can tell me, preferably if you're under 10, what were the gifts that the wise men brought? Yep, shout. Gold, yes. They brought gold because Jesus would grow up to be a king. And frankincense. That's right. Frankincense is something that you can burn and it gets a really pleasant odor. And you know, and that actually shows that Jesus was God. And then the last gift. Yes. Myrrh, absolutely. Gasper, well, it wasn't Gasper, but brought myrrh. And it's a perfume that they, in the ancient world, they put on people when they died. And this was to signify that when Jesus grew up, he would give his life to beat death so that we could be with God. And that really is the best present of all. Because it says in Romans 5:8, doesn't it, that God demonstrated his own love for us, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And that's really what this story is about. But you know, it is such a well-known story, the reading that we had and the three wise men. And we know that actually there weren't three wise men. The reason that we have three wise men is because there were three gifts. But we don't really know that at all. So I thought I'd look at our reading and I would dissect it a little bit and see if we can put some flesh on what we know and think about what we really, really know. So there are three main groups of people in this story. There are the three wise men. There is King Herod. If we go back to the Bible reading, the wise men, it wasn't in our drama, but the wise men stopped by the palace because the first place they headed was a palace because that's where they were expecting a king to be. But obviously, we know he wasn't there. And then King Herod didn't know where this new king was either, so he had to consult the teachers and the chief priests, the teachers of the law. And you know, each of these three groups of people reacted in a different way to Jesus. And we see the same reactions, the same three reactions in people today when they are introduced to Jesus. And so I thought we'd think about this a bit. So let's start with King Herod. Now, King Herod was not a very nice man. He was a schemer, and he was not just a little bit mad, especially by the time the wise men came to visit. He was completely nuts, okay? And he was desperate to hold on to his power. Earlier on in his life, he had been great friends with Antony and Cleopatra. And when they rose up against Caesar Augustus, he actually sided with Antony and Cleopatra. And when they lost, he was very clever. And what he did was he went to see Caesar Augustus. Now, you might think that was a really stupid thing to do because Caesar was likely to kill him because he'd been with the enemy. But he took off his crown and he went to see Caesar and he basically explained how good a friend he had been to Caesar, to Antony and Cleopatra. As such a good friend that he'd actually joined in this rebellion because he was friends. Not because he really wanted to, but because he was friends. And that was the depth of his friendship. And imagine what a friend he could be to Caesar. And Caesar fell for this and let him keep his position. So he remained ruler in Jerusalem. He wasn't very popular. He wasn't a Jew by birth or religion. And the Jews didn't like him. But he kept his position and he ruled with brutality. He killed off people that were a threat to him. And this included his favorite wife and three of, I think he had about 12 sons, and he actually had three of them murdered. He was so evil, and he knew that he was so unpopular, that as he was getting close to his death, he even knew, he knew that people wouldn't mourn when he died. So he made arrangements for 300 of the sort of top people in Jerusalem to be executed the moment he died, so that there would be people mourning in Jerusalem on the day of his death. Okay? He really wasn't very nice at all. And the other thing he used to do, and I don't know whether you can see this, probably better on the screens there. So this is actually a picture of one of Herod's swimming pools. This one's actually in Caesarea. And I don't know whether my little pointer thing works. Yes, oh, it does. So this is Herod's swimming pool. And what Herod used to do was he would invite people to his palace, and he would give them lots of alcohol and get them quite happy. And then he would find out what they really thought about him. And if what they thought about him wasn't good or positive, he would insist that they went swimming. And they would go swimming in one of his swimming pools, and they were all the same. And do you see this bit here? This is actually a hidden wall in the swimming pool. And he would hide soldiers behind this wall. And when the people went swimming, the soldiers would swim out underwater, and they would drown the people that he had made go swimming. And really, a not nice person at all. So you can imagine he had absolutely no qualms at all about ordering the death of the babies in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem. It wouldn't have bothered him at all, because he just was so interested in keeping power that he was only concerned with himself. You can imagine. Imagine how he felt when these wise men, when these, they rocked up to Jerusalem and asked to see the King of the Jews who had been born. And that was Herod's title. He must have been absolutely fuming, because he was only concerned with himself, with his position, and what effect this new king would have on his life. Herod liked to be in control, and the presence of Jesus meant that he would lose control. And so he was hostile, really, really hostile to even the very idea of Jesus as king, without even meeting him or investigating for himself. And you know, there are lots of people in the world like that today. They are so concerned with their own lives, their own wants, their own needs, that they're not prepared to consider that there may be a different way, a different life that could be better. Not interested in even contemplating it. And the world that we live in promotes that attitude. It promotes that attitude of me and the I, that I am so important. Think about the adverts that we see. Think about L'Oreal. I'm worth it because I'm worth it. Or the latest Ford car advert that you've seen. Do I deserve it? Yes, I deserve it. You know, for wearing a dodgy wedding dress or bridesmaid's dress. But I deserve this new car because of that. Or P&O ferries. You deserve a holiday. Our culture says it's all about me. What I need, what I want. And anything that threatens the importance of the I or the me is met with this hostility in order to drive it away. The gospel ask people to look beyond themselves, to surrender ourselves, to be willing to put aside our needs and our desires to serve others. And so when we share that gospel message with others, a common response can be hostility. And you know, we shouldn't be surprised by that. Jesus said in Matthew 5, "Blessed are you when others revile you or persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." And in Matthew 10, he tells us that you will be hated for my name's sake, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. So, as we open our lives to people this year, as we open our homes and our purses, and we engage with others and make room for them, don't be surprised if one of the reactions that you get is hostility. The next group I want to look at are the chief priests and the teachers of the law. Now, we don't know, because the text doesn't tell us, but you kind of wonder, didn't they see that star? I mean, if the wise men saw it, how did they miss it? You know, they knew the story. They knew what was happening. And in Numbers 24:17, it actually says, it talks about the star. It says, "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come forth from Jacob. A scepter shall rise from Israel and shall crush the forehead of Moab and tear down the sons of Sheth." And the teachers of the law would have known this. I mean, they knew about the Bethlehem text. And even if they didn't know, even if they hadn't spotted the star, even if they hadn't twigged, you know, once this entourage turned up and asked to see the new king, and they couldn't have missed it in Jerusalem. It says in the text, the whole of Jerusalem knew. And the Jews were looking for a Messiah. They were looking for a savior to come and to set them free. So why didn't the teachers of the law drop everything and go with the wise men to find Jesus? I think that they were pretty indifferent to the arrival of this baby. They had their lives pretty much sorted. They were in charge, providing they didn't rock the boat too much. The Romans let them get on with it. The Romans let the priests and the teachers of the law live their lives, run the Jewish nation, sort everything out. So long as they paid their taxes on time and they didn't cause any problems, they were okay to rule. And so they were happy with the status quo. And a new king might upset things, you know? And anyway, it was a baby. It wasn't the warrior who was going to overthrow the Romans and set them free completely. And so they were indifferent to the arrival of this baby, even if he might be what the wise men said he was. They were okay. It didn't make any difference to their lives. They had it sorted and they did their own thing, and so they did nothing. And again today, you know, there are lots of people who are happy with their lives, who know that Jesus is there, happy for you to share him, happy for you to talk to him, but actually don't respond. They're indifferent to the message. They're quite okay. They've got their lives sorted and they're quite okay as they are, thank you. And they don't want any disruption. And you know, the whole thing about worshipping Jesus or getting up and going to church on the Sunday morning or whatever. It's just, I'm good as I am, thank you very much. And that's a reaction that, again, as we open our lives, as we invite people in, we are going to get. People are indifferent to Jesus. They're happy with the status quo. And then finally, our wise men. Now, we know they weren't really wise men or sages seeking knowledge and wisdom. They were actually magi or astronomers. They studied the stars and they looked for truth and guidance from the stars. They brought three gifts, but We know there was at least two, because magi, which is a term used in Matthew's gospel, is plural. But there could have been 300. We actually don't know. Okay? And where did they come from? If they saw a star in the east and traveled towards it, they'd have actually come from the west. Oh, sorry. This is my little map. It's the best map I could find of the area. And actually, if the star was in the east, which is over here, okay, and we've got Jerusalem and Bethlehem there and the Jordan River, they'd have actually come from over here somewhere. But the text in the east, the word that's used could actually also mean we saw the star at his rising. So actually, it was about the star coming up. It wasn't where they came from. So they probably did travel from the east. And quite often we think about them coming from Persia, because magi was a term for astronomers from this part of the world. But actually the gifts that they brought, gold and frankincense and myrrh, were actually from Arabia and Saudi Arabia. And somewhere in the south of Saudi Arabia, which is not on my map, are the trees from which they harvest frankincense and myrrh. And gold was mined from this. Sheba is down here. And if you remember our Old Testament story and the Queen of Sheba coming and bringing all the gold to Solomon, that's where she came from. And so it's highly likely that that's actually where our magi came from. Not from Persia, but from there. But they, wherever they came from, they certainly weren't Jewish. And that's important. They were welcomed into the house. They were to give their gifts and to worship Jesus, even though they weren't Jewish. And that is such an important theme in Matthew's gospel. In Matthew 1, when we read the genealogy that Sadhu sort of alluded to last week, and in that genealogy, there are four women. That's unheard of in Jewish genealogies to actually include women. Three of them had a less than ideal past, as did some of the men that were mentioned in the genealogy. And three of them were Gentiles. Now, for those of you that don't know, so probably anyone under sort of 10, a Gentile is just somebody, it's a term for somebody who's not Jewish. Okay, so you get Jewish people and you get Gentiles. And the Magi and some of the people in the genealogy were Gentiles. And they weren't popular with Jewish people for a couple of reasons, obviously because they weren't Jewish, but also because reading the stars was something that was forbidden. And in the fact of the genealogies, they had dodgy lifestyles, some of these people. So at the beginning of Matthew's gospel, he makes it very clear that for those that choose to do it, whoever they are, whatever their past, that nobody in the world is excluded from worshipping Jesus. Nobody is excluded from coming in to Jesus' family. The Magi chose to seek out Jesus and to put themselves out, to find out more, and to finally come and bow and offer their gifts to Jesus. And that too will be the response that you get from some people that you share Jesus with this coming year. As you meet around tables or over coffee, as Jesus is revealed in the breaking of the bread, in your conversations, there will be people who want to know more. They will start to seek Jesus. And as they meet him, they will bow down and worship him. So Jesus makes room for the whole world to come to him. But in that world, we see three responses. We see the response of Herod, hostility, because Jesus challenges selfish lifestyles that are prevalent today. Jesus challenges us to put others before ourselves, and that's not popular. You will meet indifference. like the chief priests and the teachers of the law. For so many, we think we have our lives sorted. We're happy with the status quo. And so there is no room for Jesus and any disruption he will bring. And then the Magi. Worship. Some will want to know more. They will be eager to seek out Jesus and to worship him. Now, you may recognize some of these responses in yourselves. I know that for many years I was really hostile to Jesus and anyone that actually mentioned him. And yet in the end, I did start to seek him and now worship him. And so there may be people who've been dragged along because you're still staying with relatives here today, and you may be fairly hostile or indifferent. And I just want to encourage you to move towards the Magi, to become like the Magi, because, as the saying goes, wise men seek him still. And for those of us that do worship him, those of us who are coming this year, who are in this coming year, are going to step out in faith as we feed the 5,000, as we bless others, and in doing so reveal Jesus, we can expect all three responses. But don't be surprised if you're met with hostility and indifference. But be prepared for those who want to seek him and who want to bow down and to worship him. Thank you. We're going to finish with a closing worship song.